Best host, Rob McCarron. Best voice, Jeff Hawkins. Podcast of the year, Shake Them Ropes.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 120 of Shake Them Ropes. Rob McCarron here alongside, as usual, Jeff Hawkins. Jeff, how are you today, and how was your Thanksgiving?
Thank you for using 515. Thank you. Just rocking out to the Who over here. Thanksgiving was great. I worked Thanksgiving. So the WWE Network gave me a gift of old Saturday 605 World Championship Wrestling episode, so I had that on in the background while I worked. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, they did. They loaded up a bunch of the old stuff.
And they've added more, I guess. I've heard Mid-South and Smoky Mountain.
Yeah, you got Mid-South, Smoky Mountain added. You have the, mid-80s NWA, WCW.
I'll be interested to see if they put up the special events or Smoky Mountain, like Fire on the Mountain and Night of Champs.
I'm sure eventually they're going to put up everything they have. Just a matter of, but they're loading them fast and furious. Like, it's not, when they started uploading World Class, it was one or two episodes at a time. And then the next day it was one or two. And then the next day it was one or two until they just stopped. I mean, it seemed like that little network bot on Twitter that adds everything that WWE Network adds was just going like crazy with all the added TV shows.
When they flooded the 605, I was like, oh, wow. I mean, it's like 3 years at once. And then it's like all of a sudden last night I'm alerted to, oh, they're uploading Smoky Mountain stuff. I'm like, what?
Yeah, it's something. I haven't gotten to check out much of it. I did. And I watched a little bit of the first episode of the NWA WCW they added.
Yeah.
Classic NWA. I'll check that over time, but it was a pretty busy weekend. So
I'll tell you this. I'll go with this for everybody who's listening in terms of studio wrestling. Curb your enthusiasm, sort of. You're not getting main event matches here. You're getting squash matches and talking smack. That's what you're getting. You're getting like 90 seconds of beating up a dude, an occasional house show quality match, and promos to hype the live events. That's what you're getting. Don't expect, this work rate is terrible. Well, that's not the point of these shows generally. Point of these shows is to build stars. So
I am curious to see who will check out these videos and who will actually watch them a lot, because obviously much of the talk on Twitter and elsewhere are people who are waiting for these shows already. But now you're putting it up there, and I wonder how the casual fans will react. Will the casual fans check out one episode and be done with it and just stay with the current stuff? Will they keep checking out these older episodes? Because the only way you're going to get these older episodes put up in droves quicker is for them to get a lot of viewership. And I don't know how the casual fans are going to react. Like, maybe it's split. Maybe it's a small amount of the casual fans will actually take notice. But
I think people maybe 35 and up, and, especially families whose kids are into WWE, but they may have, they may be nostalgic for the wrestling of their youth.
Yeah, it's the nostalgia factor for those who find the mid-80s to be nostalgic. Like, for me, the early to mid 90s and the late 90s are now my nostalgia because we're almost 20 years from that. But the 80s aren't necessarily my nostalgia because I didn't grow up with them. They're my new stuff, my new historical context for different stuff.
This is my nostalgia, point blank. 84, 85 is when I really started getting into wrestling. So, I mean, this is right in my wheelhouse. And it's great for us, especially on the older matches, a few of which are coming up on our top 100. I can actually point to go, hey, here's where they're explaining the build to this match right here. Go watch this episode. And I can do that now without saying, go on YouTube, and I've secretly uploaded stuff.
Right. Yeah, because that's what it's been, YouTube, Daily Motion, and all these different places. But, you talk about how these shows are going to have a lot of squash matches, a lot of folks talking trash with each other, over the weekend. Some people calling for WWE to do more of this.
Yeah.
That,
I mean, I would have liked that on this last Raw.
That Raw last night. We'll get into some of the bigger points of Raw last night. We'll get into where we stand because, I mean, believe it or not, Jeff.
I think we differ because I read something where you enjoyed it.
I like the show.
Wow.
I thought it was a fun show.
I did not.
I mean, let's, we'll get into this here. but at some point, because I wanted to let you know, I mean,
yes.
I always find it hard going into December. I find it weird going into December because it's a very fast moving month. Whether you're doing Christmas shopping, whether you're getting ready for holidays, whether you're doing traveling, whether it's just the end of the year and time is flying. I always find the end of the year pretty weird, how quick everything goes. And, you know, that transition from November 30th to December 1st is always like, oh, it makes it real that we're here at the end of the year. Because next week, Jeff, on this show on Tuesday, we are doing our TLC preview and our TakeOver London preview. These shows are coming up quickly.
Yeah, and I, you know, even more so for me, before I go into that, how was your Thanksgiving? We buried the lead. I never asked and reciprocated. And your birthday, of course.
My birthday was good. Went out, had an enjoyable night. Thanksgiving was just a lot of food and watching the Bears.
The Bears.
It was a good game.
I enjoyed that game.
It was a good game. It was much better than the other games that we had on that day. I don't really remember the... Yeah, it was much better than all the games. But what are you going to do? I mean, it was a lazy day. Ended up going to Michigan, Ann Arbor, on Saturday.
Saw that. You went to the big house.
I went to the big house. I went to that that Michigan-Ohio State game. And boy...
As a Michigan fan, right?
I went as a Michigan fan. I went as a Michigan fan. I don't care about Michigan-Ohio State. But, you know, if I'm going to go... Like, the girlfriend and I were dressed in Michigan clothes, and I had a Michigan hat, and we were like, yeah, rah-rah, Michigan.
Is she a Michigan alum?
No, she doesn't care about Michigan.
it's an obvious question.
No one cares about Michigan. We just went as Michigan fans. We hung out with the Michigan fans. I was surprised, actually, how warmed up and welcoming the Michigan fans were to the Ohio State fans. I mean, there were Ohio State fans playing nicely together with the Michigan fans.
Yeah, I went to the big house in 1995, the kickoff classic.
I had been there before, but not during football season, just to like kind of see it and go inside and hang around it. But this was the first time I had been around it during a football game, much less, you know, maybe the biggest football game all year.
I'm sure your environment was probably a little bit more friendlier than mine.
Yeah, probably.
We had the second, or actually the biggest second half comeback in Michigan school history at the time, comeback to beat us on the last play. I knew how Custer felt.
I tell you what, I was surprised. I was really surprised that, I mean, Michigan, they've had a pretty good year. They've beaten expectations, even fans' expectations. They've beaten these expectations. They're coming into Ohio State with still a small chance, but a chance nonetheless of winning the Big Ten East. And at least the large group that I was around and most of the fans I was looking at, they didn't really go in thinking they had a shot to win.
Yeah.
I was stunned.
No. They've had a few rough seasons and they're ahead of schedule in rebuilding.
Right? They're ahead of schedule, but I was just surprised after all the momentum, after Harbaugh and after the shot to win the Big Ten East, that these people were like, you know, if we can win this game, great, but we're not really expecting much. Like, it's already been a banner year. We've surpassed expectations. You know, a lot of the fans, at least in the group that I was tailgating with, left about halfway through because the writing was on the wall in the first quarter, really. This Ohio State team was just so much better than Michigan, and they couldn't stop anything.
Always leave early.
Well, it was cold. I mean, it was 32. Yeah. It was snowing a little bit. And, you know, it was a cold day.
But getting back to December, that week is going to be even busier for me. I have like four shows in the span of 5 days, I think.
Because we have shows.
Yeah, because the 11th and 12th is PWG All-Star Weekend.
Oh, yeah.
The 13th is Table Ladders and Chairs. And then that Wednesday is TakeOver.
Which is just so weird for you. I mean, yeah, because you're Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then all of a sudden on a Wednesday, you're going to be like, what? I have to do another show on a Wednesday? A Wednesday afternoon, no less, when this show is going to start at noon your time.
I've become accustomed to being oversaturated. And then I'll have, you know, we'll have silly season in terms of awards and stuff.
So have we figured out what we're going to do on that Wednesday with the show starting at noon your time?
I'm going to get home as soon as I can, and I'm going to probably catch up.
And then when you're ready, we will go live.
Yeah.
on the YouTube.
You know what?
Device.
I'll probably have it on my phone on the way home.
Yeah,
and
I've done that before.
And then once I get to my place, I'll watch it, and then I'll be caught up. I'll be good.
Yeah,
don't
I've done that before, which is nice
if
about
I have
this.
To, I'll leave early from work because I have no love for work.
Oh my gosh!
There you go.
It is December. I mean, it's close enough to Christmas. You're like, hey, I'm going to take an hour here.
Mm-hmm.
But I've done that where I've watched the beginning of a show, whether it's a pay per view. Definitely, I've done it on a takeover. I did it, I believe, on one of these weekends where I went to Florida.
Yeah.
For NXT. I had to watch the first hour and a half of a pay-per-view on my phone from Indianapolis up to Fort Wayne because I hadn't gotten home in time and we were doing a show at the end. Something like that. So I've done it where I've watched some of the show while driving, which might not.
Don't ever say we don't sacrifice for you people. Don't ever say it.
I appreciate the love and support. As you heard from the openings in probably the most important awards of all time.
Yes.
Of course.
Yeah.
Sheetsandwich.com, Talking Sheet Guys. We are nominated for some awards. So if you feel the need or want to show some support for us, we would appreciate if you go and vote. You can catch the awards at sheetsandwich.com. Nominated for Best Voice is this Jeff Hawkins guy.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I am outraged by it.
Oh, Rob, once I get your impression down, we'll be fine.
I don't know. I have, I was born in Florida and I've grown up in Indiana. I probably have the one voice. I mean, those are the two places, the Midwest and Florida.
You have a silky smooth radio voice.
Yeah, you just don't, you don't grow into any type of, you know, cadence. You're talking American, really, is what you're doing, a thing.
You have bass to your voice, whereas I do not.
That's just the machines that I have hooked up to this. Otherwise, let me turn the machines off.
I really sound like this. Yeah, I'm going to Rob McCarron. How's it going?
I'm going to give you my real voice as I...
Why?
Let's see here. I don't know if this will work or not, but can you tell the difference?
No.
No, probably not. But I'm going to turn the machines back on now. And then,
that's just a microphone. That's all that is.
Yeah, it's just not a lot of difference. The mic and all this stuff. But yeah, that's...
thank you for the nominations, everybody.
Yes, thank you for the nominations. At Pro Wrestling on Twitter, you can get more information at Pro Wrestling. We're at Shake Them Ropes. Catch us on Twitter as well. You can catch all the information about our live shows, which is something we do now after the pay-per-views. And yeah, I'm just thinking about it. 1 week away, we are going to be on the 13th and the 16th live after TLC and TakeOver London. But in looking at this TLC card for Tables, Ladders, Chairs 2015, we're going to talk about Raw. We're going to talk about our highlights. Right now, we have three matches officially announced. Sheamus versus Roman Reigns in a TLC match for the title, the big black and gold belt. Kevin Owens versus Dean Ambrose for the Intercontinental Championship. And a triple threat for the tag titles, the New Day against the Lucha Dragons against the Usos. Those are your three matches now with one more Raw to go.
Do we not have the Wyatts and the Dudleys Dreamer?
We're probably going to get some combination of that, but it's not official. I wouldn't be surprised if that's made on SmackDown tonight.
I thought it was made on
SmackDown. Not official, no, because you don't know if it's going to be a 6-on-6. We don't know if it's going to be a straight tag team match. I assume it's going to be a tables match, which throws my entire Divas title concept out of the window. I thought for sure after last week with the PTO on the table that they were going to somehow be crazy enough to do a Divas title tables match at TLC.
Okay.
I did. I don't know.
No, it makes sense. Right again to Raw now. Let's do this.
Let's talk Raw. Let's talk now on tonight's Raw. Just for those who are late arriving, the part of Paige will be played by Charlotte.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
And the part of Charlotte will be paid and played by Becky Lynch. They are completely retreading the last 2 months of the angle between Paige and Charlotte and turning it into Charlotte and Becky, with Charlotte undermining Becky at different turns, but Becky being dumb enough to keep falling for it and be friends.
Not just that. This whole thing was insulting to NXT fans, to be honest with you, because they set up the match as, oh, let's do it like we did in NXT. And then it became this whole big microcosm of Vince addressing complaints from the NXT audience that, hey, we know what we're doing here. Yeah, NXT is different. This is the big leagues. And the turn doesn't make sense.
The turn doesn't
after
make sense.
2 weeks,
timing,
2 weeks after you make her the most sympathetic person in the WWE by invoking her dead brother and then pissing on her for, you know, for the blowback, pretty much. Not her, anything she did, but just, you know, she approved it. You know, she fought to have this tasteless angle brought in, and now she's absolutely unlikable. What are you doing? Why? There's so much, for lack of a better term, fuck you subtext in this angle right now.
Yeah.
And you seem relatively calm about it. I watched it and I just went,
well,
that's what they're going to do. They're going to make everybody unlikable in the Paige Charlotte feud and then make Becky into Sting.
You're going to start seeing, honestly, you're going to start seeing positive crowd reactions for Nikki and Brie.
And that's, I don't doubt that, because they never really turn Brie and Nikki. They kind of half-heartedly make them heels, and then they make them baby faces after the week. Yeah,
I'm
when Nikki returns, she's going to be the big baby face, isn't
you.
She?
I'm telling
this
you.
This is insane.
It's amazing how it works, but you got Sasha Banks in there with Brie Bella, and the whole time the crowd momentum is starting to turn to Brie Bella, and Nikki Bella's going to come back, and she's going to be the fighting former champion who comes back from injury to reclaim the division, and your baby faces, and not just the baby faces in this angle, but the most popular women in that division will still be the Bellas. They will come out the true stars out of this. Not that I want them to, or not that I don't want them to, but seeing the crowd reactions already, seeing the way they've mishandled Charlotte, and now that they're turning her into this heel who cheats to win, maybe that'll get over. Maybe it will. I mean, I think she's better as a bad woman than a good woman.
And the heat's all on her dad, though. That's the thing.
Some of the heat's on the dad. I don't know if all of the heat is on the dad,
well,
honestly.
Most of it is.
But I just find it so funny that you're doing exactly what you did with Charlotte and Paige. Just all of a sudden, Charlotte is the bad one in here, and Becky is the Paige. And you're probably going to get a triple threat, maybe, at
TLC.
And it makes
the Divas Revolution even that much more insignificant. Because the whole point was to inject new life into this division, only to have Nikki and Brie turn out to be the stars.
And the reason why I wasn't getting so worked up over it, because I'm not going to get worked up over the Divas division right now, because, I mean, why? You know, why should I? It's going crazy. I'm interested to see where it goes, if only for the fact that at some point they might accidentally get it right, because on this path they certainly aren't. But I'm excited for this. Because I did enjoy the Sasha Banks and Brie Bella match.
I did. I enjoy Team Bad. I enjoy everything about Team Bad.
I do enjoy also the fact that they are building, it looks like, to Sasha and Nikki. And that, to me, is the true main event of the Divas division right now. If you put Sasha Banks in there with Nikki Bella and give it time, that will be much bigger than whatever they're doing with Charlotte and Paige. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I don't care about Charlotte's angle right now, because what we're going to see for the next week, and maybe 2 weeks, and maybe even longer, I don't know if it'll stop at the pay-per-view or not, but what we're going to see is Charlotte continuing to undermine Becky, and Becky will keep being friends with her, which we just saw 2 months ago, and how can you possibly care? I don't, but I'm intrigued by what they do with Nikki Bella coming back and Sasha Banks, because one, I think that could be a good match. I think Nikki Bella still doesn't get the credit she deserves for holding up the division for the whole year for us to even have, you know, women on TV right now on the Raw side. And I'm just intrigued by it. I'm looking forward. Yes, I will say it. I'm looking forward to Nikki Bella and Sasha Banks.
I wish they would do something with Becky here. I know, because she's more talented than the other two people in the feud.
She's super talented. But right
and then,
now,
and then
she's
they make
be...
and then they make her treat her losses like she doesn't care. And it's, you know, on social media and whatnot. And it's just, it's the whole pun thing.
Yeah.
Like, just do something with
right.
her. And although let me, before we get off of this.
Yeah.
Team Bad last night Go look at the GIF or GIF of when
it's a GIF. Sasha it's was GIF, by the way. It's GIF I and see. It's niche. It's GIF and it's niche. Stop it, everybody. Go on.
When she's imitating the Bella twirl.
Yes.
Not only is Sasha great in that, Tamina's reaction, where it's just like, yep, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Is fantastic. Tamina has found a role as just a heavy who just kicks people's ass on the outside and never steps in the ring. Love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Right. Me too.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. But I wanted to say what you started with as far as them kind of poo-pooing NXT and making fun of that a little, like you're in the big leagues now in WWE. I mean, to me, you know, that kind of just plays into the Charlotte heel turn. Like, obviously, Becky was coming at her with, you know, let's do it like we did in NXT, where we show, you know, our athleticism and our talent and all this stuff. And Charlotte, if she's going to go bad, of course, she's going to say you're in the big leagues now because Charlotte is the champion of WWE. If you were the bad guy, it was like if Ric Flair was going to WWE, he would poo-poo WCW. Like, I'm the real champion. I'm here now. So this is the big leagues. No different than that. I don't care about the subtext.
It's different.
No, it's not. It's not. Different. It's really not different. It's not different at all.
Okay.
You want to read into it that it's different just because, oh, Vince hates NXT and he's trying to bury Triple H. It's not different if you just take the face of
okay,
it.
Okay, well, let me...
We can assume and we can guess what the hidden intention is.
If you take it like that, then what keeps Becky from bringing in Reed to tear her down from her high horse a bit? See, that's the other thing you bring in here, because with the character development that's been going on, this heel turn goes, and you know what affects her, and you know what her weakness is. Why don't you go after her weakness then? Well, you can't do that because it's in bad days.
Well,
because
Becky's a good girl.
You can't play both sides of that.
And right now, Becky's still friends with her for whatever reason.
Wow, this is tough love. Your brother, no.
No. Now you're just going in a weird place, and I don't even know where you're going.
All right.
Like, what just happened there?
Your point, it's close to talking me into it, but I just can't talk me into it because I'm just watching this and going, why are you crapping on something that you show on your own network in this way? Because it's not full on crapping. Don't get me wrong on that. We'll get to that when we get to Lana. It's still dismissive of it. And that just seems odd that you don't prop it up as something great, but you lower it as something second class. And it's like when they trash WCW on the shows still now, when they have their entire library on the network and they want you to go watch it. That kind of thing. There's a disconnect there.
Speaking of Lana, she's back.
For now.
For now. Forever. Lana's back for good. Explain the for now, because I bet you're not alone. I bet you're not alone in thinking. First of all, the for now to me is the League of Nations that was begun on this show.
Yeah.
Like, I see that either lasting a whole 2 weeks, or maybe they're crazy and they go all the way to WrestleMania. But.
Well, they injured her and they didn't bring her out for the League of Nations. So you never know. They could always just say it's a horrible, horrible injury, even though it was lame, and take her off of TV.
Yeah, the League of Nations thing.
Especially
so
after
weird.
Hearing she had quote unquote nuclear heat, which.
Right, which is not true.
Get go. Yeah.
But what are you going to do?
That whole segment.
Lana says Lana's back.
That was a rib on everybody, except maybe Ryback. They put it on right at kickoff. Who's the only guy on the roster who cared about that game on Monday night? Miz. And so you're getting face pops against Lana for slut shaming her. That's what it was. It was just basically go out and go, yeah, Lana slept with Dolph. Dolph even put on his social media during that time. Ryback got a cheer out of slut shaming Lana. And then the story of that match is that Rusev picked his girlfriend over his career. And that people get hurt too easily.
People get hurt. Yeah, it was a weird segment. It was a weird show long storyline because they had the Adam Rose thing afterwards.
Yeah.
Which spent a minute talking about just Dolph. And I mean, you can call it slut shaming on Lana, but really it was slut shaming on Dolph Ziggler and Rusev too. I mean, let's not be, you know, it was. Let's not be the, one about the
double,
it.
The double stand. Well, no, Rusev threw in his part there. And I didn't sleep with Summer either to try and kind of save it. But it was, It was slut shaming. You were getting cheers from saying you slept with Dolph. You went all the way with Dolph. Might as well cheered whore at her.
You went all the way. I'm not saying it's right by any means, but I'm just saying, you know, at the same time with the Adam Rose segment, I mean, they were doing the same thing with Dolph, implying also that Dolph sleeps with men.
They were reiterating the Rusev part of it, though, for that Adam Rose segment.
Yes, I know.
The Rusev-Lana part.
I know. The whole segment was about the Lana-Rusev part. It was just weird. I mean, Adam Rose ain't going to go anywhere with that segment, by the way. Going nowhere with that segment.
That's why I read into the NXT thing as I did, because you read into these kinds of things.
Who's reading into what? You are just all over the place. You are just all over the place.
Because you're just trying to be an apologist for this Raw.
I'm not. I will give you exactly why I like this show. Because not only were the New Day entertaining all over this episode, I mean, this whole episode of Raw was New Day City.
Yeah.
It was putting over Sheamus as a big star, or trying to put over Sheamus as a big star as your champion. So why not do that? You had the League of Nations forming, which may not be the best thing. It's intriguing. Like, I don't know what they're doing with Alberto Del Rio. I don't know what they're going to do for the long haul here. I don't know where Brock Lesnar fits in when he comes back.
I'll give you my theory.
I don't want your theory right now. I don't know where John Cena fits in when this comes back, only to think that John Cena will be the one who destroys all seven of these guys by himself. And the only question I have is whether or not Roman Reigns will help him, or if it'll just be left to John Cena. I'm intrigued. From the moment the show started and they were going to do the title match with Roman Reigns and Sheamus, at least this episode gave me something to look forward to. And it just built up what are they going to do to me? And you know what? I was entertained going through the 3 hours of the show with, you know, the matches that were happening, with the ideas of what could be done with it. I don't know. I understand that there was a lot of backlash on the show. I understand all the negativity towards certain segments on the show. I'm not saying everything was a home run. I'm just saying this wasn't one of the worst Raws of the year.
I just don't see how you thought they built Sheamus up here as anything more than a goof.
He was a little goofy.
I thought they misfired on the attitude of Roman throughout the whole thing, and being cocky and smirking and smiling as opposed to just being angry.
He has nothing to be cocky about right now. I mean, this guy should be a guy who's angry, getting screwed over and screwed over.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be cocky, because whether we think he might be able to beat Sheamus, that's not the issue. We know at this point that Roman Reigns can beat Sheamus. So we don't need the cocky aspect. We need the guy who's looking for a smart way to get around the fact that he will always get screwed out of the title. Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen that yet. When Steve Austin was going through this, Steve Austin found ways to get around the boss, and he made the boss look like a fool sometimes. Ain't no one going to be making Triple H look like a fool. And Roman Reigns needs to be more of that kind of Steve Austin-ish, to where mm-hmm. he's going to get around all the screw jobs. We're going to talk about Daniel Bryan and John Cena from SummerSlam 2013, which, you know, is good timing again with these top 100 matches, because we've saw a similar angle happen here with Roman Reigns. How did Daniel Bryan get around that? He had a crowd reaction forcing the authority to put him where they didn't want him. Roman Reigns ain't forcing the authority to put him where they want him at all right now.
No.
And there is no incentive here for the crowd to get behind a cocky Roman Reigns, because, yeah, we know you can beat Sheamus. How about you go out there and try to figure out a way to do it? Because right now you're not figuring out that way.
It was the right move done the wrong way. It, you know, if he had just punched Sheamus, taken the belt, and stormed to the back and held it up, that had been fine. But it was the smiling, you know, the high-fiving of fans, the "I got one over on him." No, you should be pissed. You should be pissed beyond hell. And, you know, Sheamus kind of the same way. Kind of, I wanted a little bit more, "I outsmarted you," as opposed to, "Look at me, I'm the Irish champion. Boogie, 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 boogie." You know, that kind of crap. It was just like, there was a disconnect there. I mean, there are ideas there. I think, though, they set up what they're doing here. And it's smart in some ways, but it's, you know, as I wrote to you, it's all or nothing and all and nothing at the same time.
Yeah.
And Roman Reigns, let me explain that. Roman Reigns was teamed with his buddies, the Usos and Dean Ambrose. They're now falling by the wayside due to injury and just being beatable and getting bro kicked and whatnot. So they'll go off and do their stuff there. And they had a 7-on-1 beatdown on Roman Reigns. And now Roman's going to have to get his revenge through all 7 of them. So you already had him go through all the Wyatts. And now he's going to have to go through basically every single upper mid-card heel that you have in the company. So you're going to cannibalize that whole side of the ledger to get this guy over. So they're going after it. They're going to have the Roman Reigns revenge tour where he beats all 7 of these guys on his way and probably gets screwed at the end for the title and then we all get angry about it. But that's the plan, it appears to me, at least. And so instead of building some sort of feud here in terms of two characters who are going to go on a collision course, you're going to have to now rebuild these 7 guys in some way. Although the New Day won't need that much rebuilding. They'll just go off and do their tag title feud and whatnot. And then, you know, you kind of have Rusev and Barrett as cannon fodder, Del Rio as who knows what at this point, and Sheamus.
I will say one of the big news items to come from Raw last night is something that didn't actually happen on Raw last night.
Owens?
Kevin Owens was reportedly ill, too ill to be on the show. The Alberto Del Rio slot in this League of Nations was going to be Kevin Owens.
And that would make sense to then pair him off again with Ambrose.
He was feuding with Ambrose. Kevin Owens was going to be the guy. When Kevin Owens couldn't be written on the show and they had a, you know, and had to even out the rounds, they at the last minute put Alberto Del Rio in the League of Nations. When you thought to yourself as this was happening, oh, this doesn't make sense. No, it didn't. They just had to put Alberto Del Rio in. Kevin Owens was going to be in this group. And thank God he's not.
No, yeah, this might be the best thing to happen to him.
I will tell you, I believe that Kevin Owens was ill. But a little part of me thinks Kevin Owens studied the Kevin Nash guidebook. Like, oh, this is a great, great idea. I'm too sick. I can't do it. I'm sorry. You got to get someone else. Because Kevin Owens, no. I mean, first of all, let's talk about the Kevin Owens character, right? He fights for a prize. What prize is he getting if he fights to help Sheamus keep the world title? None. Kevin Owens doesn't fit in this group, but he was going to be in it and just be another face in the crowd. And Kevin Owens has done a pretty good job so far of trying to avoid being another face in the crowd. Like, he has his singles matches. Even when he's another face in the tournament, he stands out a little bit. But that would have killed him right there. You get in this League of Nations group. So I'm glad he wasn't put in this group. I hope he gets better if he is indeed sick, and I have no reason to doubt that he is. But I hope he gets better. I hope now that they've run with Alberto Del Rio in this group, he can stay far away from it. But he was going to be in this group. He was going to get the Alberto Del Rio slot, and Del Rio was going to be away from this group waiting for the John Cena return. So,
you can also get rid of Zeb and Lana if you wanted to.
Yeah, I have no doubt that they might get rid of Zeb, or maybe Del Rio and Jack Swagger will be focused more on SmackDown, and then Del Rio will go back with this League of Nations. And that's why part of me thinks the League of Nations isn't going to be a long-term thing. I don't know if you're going to be seeing League of Nations shirts. Maybe you will. Because unless Sheamus is going to keep the title to Royal Rumble, and maybe they're going to be a group inside the Royal Rumble match trying to help each other win. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if this is a long-term thing, but I mean, we'll see. It's another, I mean, this whole December period.
And then they added the New Day on top of it, which was weird.
Then you added the New Day on top of it just because it was the New Day show. I mean, they were in every other segment on the show, and it's amazing. You have the injuries to Seth Rollins. Daniel Bryan is still out. You have John Cena filming the show. You have Brock Lesnar gone right now. There's no Undertaker until WrestleMania season.
Orton.
You know, fans, no Orton. Fans for years and years, ever since what, 2006, have been calling, push the mid-carders, push the undercarders, get new blood in the main event. Well, here on this Raw, they just pushed every single mid-carder into the main event all at once. And that's not the way to do it. I mean, one or two guys, move people up slowly, make it make sense. You can't just put every mid-carder in the main event and think anyone's going to care.
And they have to have a reason to do it. And they don't really have a reason all hate Roman Reigns. Now, if they explain that, that'd be great. The thing that will kill this even more is if they team them with the Authority. God, well, that would just make them the ultimate cannon fodder hunter.
I mean, they're effectively the Authority because they're on the same side. Triple H isn't their figurehead, but effectively they are the Authority. Anytime they're on screen together, it's going to be the Authority backing the League of Nations.
So yeah, but there's a difference between silent partner and on-screen partner.
Oh, you're right. The New Day definitely has a reason to hate the Roman Reigns group because the Usos are in it.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin Owens was going to be in it, you know, taking on Dean Ambrose, and there's your, you know, four guys who were paired together making sense.
Yeah.
You know, King Barrett and Rusev are just there. Mm-hmm. It is funny. I mean, part of the show last night felt a little like the April 2000 Nitro era where they were resetting everything and the new groups formed and you didn't really know what the characters' motivations were because all of a sudden two people were fighting and now on the same side because they just did a actual reset of the show. And then also part of the show felt like Thunder when all the main stars stopped appearing on Thunder. Like this episode of Raw was maybe even under an episode of SmackDown lately, because SmackDown's the same show as what Thunder used to be, right? Where, you know, the John Cena's weren't going to be on the show even if he was on tour with WWE. Your main stars aren't on SmackDown. So you had Seth Rollins on the show running all rampant.
I had tapped out by this point of WCW. I knew it wasn't ever going to come back.
Thunders were bad, man. Thunders were like WCW Saturday nights at the end with one or two main, like the US title with Raven was the number one thing on Thunder. You know, it was crazy, but that's what it felt like to me, like an episode but of Thunder back in the day.
Yeah, the only sense of hope I ever had was that the Natural Born Thrillers would click.
Right, right. Well, you would have those mid-carders or lower-card guys that you wanted to see on TV more. Like, that was the good thing about Thunder. You saw the guys who weren't getting TV time on Nitro thrive on Thunder. And right now, with all these major guys out on WWE, you're seeing Sheamus get the bigger spot. And whether we want Sheamus to be up there or not, whether it's past his time or not, he's getting another shot. You have King Barrett, you know, who might be the least important guy in this entire thing. Like, he's just out there to be out there.
Either going to be him or Rusev.
The New Day is getting a ton of time. And I worry that they're overexposing the New Day.
They are a bit.
But you also have Rusev. I mean, Rusev is on TV in a couple of major things right now, but I say major things as if it's a big deal. I mean, Rusev on TV seems like not a big deal at all. It's a weird dynamic with WWE right now. I'm talking right now as in the last couple of weeks and definitely on this week's TV is everything here should feel important because it's the main event program. You have this new group coming up. You have Rusev back with Lana. Everything should feel important. It feels a little like a reset and a reset with stories that just aren't clicking at all, even still.
Yeah, no real heat between this main event group.
There's no real heat. No one's popular. I mean, who's the most popular one right now? Is it Dean Ambrose?
You mean in the face side?
Anyone. Anyone.
The New Day.
On the entire show. Okay, New Day.
Yeah, that's it.
New Day gets reactions. You have Dean Ambrose getting reactions, but no one else is popular.
Dolph gets a pop for when he comes out.
Like, you wonder
why. Because they know it's going to be a decent match.
You wonder why you wonder why this Pittsburgh crowd was a little lackadaisical on this show. Like, that went into, I think, part of the negatives on Raw is the crowd was really weak for a lot of the stuff on the show. And they have reason to be. Like, there is no one on that show that's a must-see guy. At least when John Cena's there, he's must-see. When Brock Lesnar's there, he's must-see. Seth Rollins was getting to the point where he was must-see, and that bled into what Roman Reigns was doing, because Roman, you wanted to see what he did with Seth. Right now,
they burned Pittsburgh on a Royal Rumble, didn't they?
Yes, I believe the Pittsburgh, wasn't it, where The Rock came back? That might have been in Pittsburgh, I don't know.
Yeah.
But they've burned him before, yes, but there's just nothing on the show right now that is must see at all.
I still enjoyed
the episode as a bottle right there, I just, for long term, there's nothing that if I was going to a show, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see so-and-so. Like, there is no one on the show right now in character-wise that I'm like, I can't wait to see him.
And in further bad news for those of us who care about such things, another NXT call-up who's going to be mid-card of main event within 2 weeks.
Yeah, Tyler Breeze has nothing.
And Tyler Breeze, he's Bo Dallas again. He's you know,
Fandango. He's you know, Adam Rose.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys who came up. It's just silly, man. He's silly.
A diva. Put him in the divas division.
At least Tyler Breeze can work. Like, he's more entertaining in the ring than an Adam Rose or than, you know,
That match was a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong. I liked the Dolph match, but they're just trading wins, so it means nothing.
But, like, that's the only thing that's going to keep Breeze on at least Raw is the fact that he's pretty good in the ring.
Yeah.
He won't get sent to main event only and superstars only like a Fandango or an Adam Rose. So at least that's one solace for Tyler Breeze. But you're right. I mean, this guy would have been better off just hanging out in NXT until the end of the year. Get, you know, call me up at post-WrestleMania when you maybe have a clue what you're going to do.
Let me know when Vince steps down.
I don't know if that's going to help much.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's a huge unknown, and I have my doubts.
I mean, all of this, you know, when Triple H takes over, you see what he does with NXT.
I don't have as much faith in Triple H as a lot.
I know. I don't either. I think there's a lot of folks out there. I wonder if, you know, you guys listening to the show might be part of this group that thinks.
Talk me off this ledge.
When Triple H takes over, we're going to see the Tyler Breezes. We're going to see the Finn Balors because these are the guys he's pushing in NXT. Triple H has said on the record, and I believe he believes it himself. He can push one way for NXT. Doesn't mean it's going to translate to the main roster. Doesn't mean he's going to do it on the main roster.
No, you're right.
So while I look forward to the day where there's a new top guy calling the shots in WWE, I don't know if that necessarily means things are going to get how we want them. But I obviously we'll see. Maybe we will. Maybe we won't. That's WWE Raw, is we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
It's all it is right now. And the folks are still watching. I mean, not as many as before. You know, the ones with the most complaints, the ones that you watch on Twitter and Facebook, and, you know, if you're on message boards every which way, you know, the negativity that comes out of WWE programming, and yes, I understand there was a lot of it last night, those people will keep watching. You know, it's when those people stop watching that WWE is going to feel like they have a problem. I mean, let me ask you this, Jeff. Do you think that WWE and what they did on Raw last night thinks they were fixing an issue?
I don't think they have an issue. Because the entire setup of the program is still the same. I think they're tweaking it, but I don't think they think it's an all hands on deck issue. Let me put it that way. I think they need to tweak.
Well, they have no hands. I mean, that goes back into something we talked about going into Survivor Series. They have no hands to call right now. This is the deck they have, period. John Cena will come back. That's it. Brock Lesnar was never a guy who's going to work, you know, every single date.
Nobody's been bigger than the WWE brand, though, and that's always been their opinion. The brand is solid. It just needs retooling in some ways. And yeah. I think that's the corporate line, and I think that's what they're going with. I didn't see this as they took a step back to see what the problem was and made some changes to it. I think, oh no, things are going well. It'll turn around eventually because we're the WWE. We're the only game in town. Just keep doing what you're doing. Let's make another star here and keep going on with our lives.
I have two questions for you before we get into our next segment.
Okay, well, what's our next
question? Number one. Okay. Kevin Owens.
Mm-hmm.
If he's on Raw next week,
mm-hmm.
will he be paired up with the League of Nations or no?
No.
And my second question, Monday Night Raw in Florida. The night after the Royal Rumble. The night after the Royal Rumble, Jeff.
Okay.
Who is the WWE World Heavyweight Champion?
Brock Lesnar.
I should have asked at the end of this calendar year, December 31st, who do you think is the WWE World Heavyweight Champion? Because I don't know.
Sheamus.
Yeah. I mean, TLC is coming up. I don't know if Roman Reigns wins it there. especially now that you formed this big heel group, I think Roman Reigns has to go through the Royal Rumble, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's a mistake. I don't think they're going to, I think if Roman Reigns wins the Rumble, they're not going to turn off. I mean, they're not going to clamor to him.
2 years in a row? Like,
They may have to give him the belt. They may have to give him the belt.
Just so he doesn't have to be in that Rumble.
Just so he doesn't have to, just to avoid the Rumble.
Maybe he wins at the
Rumble. They may rematch him with Sheamus at the Rumble and let him win it there. And then they can have the stare down after Brock wins the Rumble.
Yeah, that's the thing too. I don't know where Brock's going to be. I mean, at this point now too, you have to keep Daniel Bryan off of TV for at least 2 more months. Whether that was going to be what they wanted to do or not, you can't put him back on TV now. So of course that means he'll be back on the January 2 episode. Or whenever the first episode of 2016 is. 2016 just coming up so quick. Our next segment, this is a new segment. The unofficial and arbitrary NXT power rankings. Did you watch NXT last week?
I did.
I did as well. The big Eva Marie Bailey Divas Women's Championship match took place. We're headed into NXT TakeOver. We'll start first with the NXT TakeOver card because we have the what is expected to be the full card complete. We have the full thing now. For the NXT title, Finn Balor and Samoa Joe. For the tag team titles, Dash and Dawson against Enzo and Big Cass. Mm-hmm. The women's championship, Bayley versus Nia Jax with Eva Marie at ringside. Very important. Apollo Crews and Baron Corbin. And Emma versus Asuka. There are 2 matches I'm really looking forward to on this show. Like, bigger than anything else. Maybe even 3. Yeah, I would say 3. Emma versus Asuka should be really fun. Apollo Crews and Baron Corbin is unpredictable and should be fun. I mean, Baron Corbin risks kind of turning into this big homegrown guy who just loses all his matches, kind of like Tyler Breeze was on TakeOver. Like, Baron might be the new Tyler Breeze. And then the main event, Finn Balor and Samoa Joe. If you had to rank your matches 1, 2, 3, Jeff, on the show, what are your most look forward to matches?
Balor and Joe would probably be number 1.
Yeah, me too.
Number 2, probably the Asuka Emma match.
Yeah, I could see that.
And number 3,
you might be a big tag team fan, aren't you?
You're gonna I'm a big tag team fan. Well, yeah. It's tempting because I like both those teams, even though they're not the greatest workmanlike teams. They're always up for a show. That's what I like about both those teams. They're always up for a show. But for me, the curiosity factor of Bayley and Nia Jax has me at number 3 for that one.
Yeah, there's big curiosity factor for sure with Nia Jax because you're building up Asuka. Bayley's had her moment. Maybe they even move up Bayley to the main roster. Maybe they do a long program with Bayley chasing again. You know, I would not be surprised at all if Nia Jax maybe brings the title home.
And this might have nothing to do with it as well. This could be me talking out of my rear. Nia is related to The Rock, and hey, we could use all the positive pub we could get to kind of maybe nudge your boy to come to WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I know it's very minor. It's very, very minor.
I wonder if he's turned off too. The last time they used The Rock to give the pub to someone, they gave it to Roman and they booed him out of the building.
Yeah.
So maybe it might be a little worried about that.
He had an interesting comment on social media during Raw.
Did he?
Yeah. Someone had, whoever runs the WWE creative humor account.
Uh-huh.
Wrote something to the effect of a conversation between WWE and The Rock. It's like, hey, Rock, we'd like to plug your next movie. And he goes, nah, that's all right. I got this, I think. And Rock goes, oh, that's so cruel, but so funny. Or something to that effect. He really enjoyed that joke. I was like, maybe he is turned off.
Why wouldn't you be? I mean, there's got to be someone in his ear saying, maybe we don't need these guys right now.
Tommy Dreamer's not enough for you to turn around on.
Tommy Dreamer's back. I mean, Jesus Christ. This Tommy Dreamer
maybe they'll make TLC an ECW tribute show like TNA did.
This Tommy Dreamer guy just keeps on coming back.
Yeah.
Keeps on keeping on. Good for him. I mean, good for Tommy Dreamer. But I know there were, you know, we're...
He's the Dorian Gray of hardcore.
Yeah, yeah. The unofficial and arbitrary NXT power ranking. So what I'm going to do here, okay. And if you have yours, you're going to do yours as well. I don't know if you do.
I can wing it.
You can wing it, sure. The top four in the power rankings coming out of last week's NXT. Number four, debuting in the power rankings at number four, Michael Cole, interim general manager, as William Regal was out with his neck surgery. Michael Cole going from broadcaster and voice of WWE to being in charge
now hold
of the
on.
Developmental territory.
We need to lay out for the listeners here what your criteria for power rankings are.
My criteria are whatever I want.
Okay.
Did you not understand the title? Unofficial and arbitrary.
And arbitrary, yeah, but I thought you might have some sort of, I mean,
did you think I was gonna Michael... Oh, number four, Apollo Crews, because he's good. Number three, Baron Corbin, because he's better.
No, it's just you have four slots and you put Michael Cole in one of them. Okay.
Yeah, dude moved up in the world. He's got power now.
Wait, okay.
Undefeated WrestleMania WWE legend gets power.
Rob, I'm done. Keep going.
Are you done now?
I'm done.
You're done?
I'm so done.
You're done.
I'm well done.
Number three, Elias Samson, the Drifter, Jeff. Elias Samson's coming to TV in a town near you, as long as you live in Florida. A town near you, Elias Samson is coming with his guitar, getting TV vignettes and everything. Will he last longer than the perfect 10 Ty Dillinger? And by longer, I mean a whole 5 minutes.
He'll last longer than Cal Bishop. Yeah.
Number two. Jumping the gun a little bit there, Jeff. Cal Bishop. This guy was signed to WWE for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Gets cut in October. And thank God he was on this WWE breaking ground, because had he not been, he would have absolutely no shot of really getting any type of independent wrestling bookings that mattered.
I thought he was great on this show.
But now, you know, coming from breaking ground, he has a little bit of a name out there, just a little bit. He might get a couple of bookings out of that, maybe a PWS appearance or two.
Hopefully.
So yeah,
the editing was a dick move, though. Just that sort of, and you're fired.
Cal Bishop getting on the power rankings because of his firing. And I wanted to ask you about that too, Jeff, because we had the Devon Taylor firing on Breaking Ground a couple of weeks ago. We had the Cal Bishop firing here. When they were filming this show, this could be considered a dick move or not. I find it a little too convenient that they chose Cal Bishop and Devon Taylor to follow out of all the names that are in NXT developmental. It's just so convenient that they followed them and then fired them pretty early on. I have to think now that they knew months prior that they were going to fire these two individuals, and that's why they chose them to be on the show. Like, we're going to see them try to come back, and then boom, it's going to be a surprise because they're fired. Like, they knew what their fates were before they started filming the show. Otherwise, it's just a heck of a convenience.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they had a list of characters and, you know, kind of like a TV show. And before you go into writing your script, okay, who's expendable? Boom and boom. Well, that'll cause drama. Unless they did it just for the cameras and they're not really fired, which is also a possibility, but I think they're fired.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, we're going to choose between Cal Bishop and Rick, or what's his name? The Knox.
Oh.
I forget what his first name is. I want to say Rick Knox, but that's the PWG referee.
Yeah.
So that's obviously not it. But the Knox fella. The Knox fella who, you know, botched a move on the top rope when I went to visit the performance center in the crash pad ring. That Knox fella. They chose Cal Bishop, coming off of the injuries. And it very well may not be a coincidence. I mean, they may have been like, okay, this is a guy who's coming back from so many injuries, and then he happens to just be let go. I have this feeling they knew they were going to let him go for the television show. So they just kept him going along, kept him going, knowing full well this guy was getting fired on the TV show.
And hey, here, come tell us your story on camera. You know, it's a really good underdog story of when you overcome. And then, oh, yeah, we'll have this camera in this office here. And you have to go see Cayman or whatever his name is.
If I'm Sabatelli down there, I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried if I'm Sabatelli, because I kind of fit the mold of the unknown guys who might be getting cut versus the big names like Baron Corbin and Dana Brooke who have no shot at being cut.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm him. I'm going, thank God I'm not ZZ.
Well, that too. That's I think everyone down there is thinking
they're just
they're
clowning
not ZZ.
That guy. Yeah. Well, that's a shame, though. Well, I mean, that's bullying.
No. He's clowning himself a little bit. Because nothing he's doing is anything that anyone else isn't doing. You know, the drills and the conditioning and all the stuff. Like, he's clowning himself. Yeah, they offered him a spot. He could have easily said no. They're using him for maybe comedic effect by hiring him.
Well, they're using it to basically say, you can't do this.
But it's not bullying because he's signed up for it and he's wanting to do it.
Oh, but they didn't offer it to him in good faith. I don't think.
Oh, no. No, absolutely not. They didn't offer it to him thinking this guy was going to be this guy we have to have.
I'm not saying they're treating him unfairly. Yeah, he doesn't have the cardio, but they should have, you know, before you get him in there drilling with the other first years, get his cardio up and then, you know, hold him off for a session and then put him in with the next set of rookies has his cardio back up. Now you're just clowning him.
No, what I'll say is when they bring guys in, they should already have the cardio.
I agree there too. Yes, that you should be ready to go. So don't offer the guy with no cardio. Tell him, get your cardio going and we'll offer you a contract.
I mean, they're not signing this guy to be on the treadmill for 3 months, you know?
No, but they're not signing him with any genuine interest either.
Oh, no, they're not. Oh, for sure they're not. And he's still there. So really, the joke is definitely on him.
And, well, it's on the people who watched Tough Enough who liked him. That's who the joke's on. It's screw you guys. He can't hack it. See? Look at him.
Do you think there's something bigger to where they're putting this guy on breaking ground so in future seasons of Tough Enough, like, okay, like these guys if you want, but these are the guys who are never going to make it. So maybe put your value and put your emotion on someone who actually has a chance to make it.
Tough Enough already has that false reality of these guys have what it takes to make it possibly. So I don't, you know, I just think it's a continuation of, you know, these guys can't make it really. And here's why. It's just furthering the bit in some ways of Tough Enough more than as a cautionary tale of any kind.
And number one on the power rankings, referee Danilo. This guy gets the assignment to referee Eva Marie and Bayley for the women's championship. And what does WWE do? They don't trust this guy. They bring in Charles Robinson.
Little Nate
to come in and make sure that nothing goes down. And Danilo gets the last laugh because Charles Robinson is a bumbling idiot in this match. Doesn't know what he's doing. Everything is going to shit.
The whole episode's a troll that they're going to screw Bayley. That was the beauty of it.
Well, it was a beautiful match. I love the whole presentation. But Danilo comes back after getting kicked out, physically kicked out of the match. Comes back, counts the 1, 2, 3, is the referee who gets things done correctly, while WWE official Lil Nate is fully embarrassed. So number one on the power rankings this week for his valor and keeping everything as briefly controversial as it can be. Danilo, your ref, Robbie E's brother, is your number one on the first ever
I didn't know that
NXT power rankings.
Damn, he's good friends with Sasha, but
who isn't good friends with? Well, because they were on the same independent scene. He was Dan Echos on the independent scene. Rob Echos, brother. Good for Danilo getting the spot there, because that's a story that they really didn't focus on. But Danilo had been the ref in a lot of these Divas Championship matches that had kind of had some controversy. He was the ref who counted the non-3 for Eva Marie. in the match that was botched on Eva Marie's return where she didn't kick out.
No, I knew. Yeah, I knew that.
So they were kind of playing that up a little bit. Like, we're sending Charles Robinson out because we don't trust Danilo fully to referee these matches. So instead of just sending like Drake Younger in there, why don't we send a second ref out? Because everything always goes right when there's a second ref. So there is your power rankings, your first ever power four for NXT.
Oh, do I get to do four now?
Nope,
I
we're done. We are moving on. Right. Because you took too long.
I took too long. You're the one who ranked them.
Yeah. Well, now you know the gimmick. You can come up with yours next week.
I'll just change the show next
week. I tell you what, maybe we'll do that.
Come up with something and just...
Maybe next week you'll do yours, and then we'll just, transfer weeks. We'll just go back and forth. It is time, Jeff.
Yes.
For match number 54 on our top 100 countdown. The best matches to see before you die. This is WWE.com's list. We are going down the list from 100 to 1, doing a match on each show, talking about what led into that match, talking about the match itself, where we are from that match. Match number 54 on the countdown, John Cena versus Daniel Bryan, two guys who are not around currently, only 2 years later. John Cena, Daniel Bryan at WWE SummerSlam 2013, the main event. What was scheduled to be the last match of the show, this was for the WWE Championship. Jeff Hawkins, I watched this match earlier today. I love it. It was my favorite match on that card. I know it's a toss-up, really, between Brock Lesnar and CM Punk and the Cena-Daniel Bryan match. Where did you stand? How did this rate in terms of the matches on SummerSlam 13?
I went back and watched it because I hadn't seen it on TV in a while. I was here live.
You were there live. That's right.
I like the match. I really do like the match because I like that they both take turns playing very subtle heels in their own way. It kind of flip flops there for a second, then it goes back. But Cena doing the whole gimmick of addressing the fans, "I can't wrestle me," that's brilliant. Anyone who doubts that John Cena could not pull off being a heel is wrong. He was great,
I don't think anyone thinks he cannot pull it off. I just, they're like, he's never going to be a heel, not because he can't pull it off, but because there's too much money in him being a babyface.
I had forgotten all about that elbow problem of his. That thing was nasty.
It was gross. Like, he was wearing the pad here, but on the Raw before, it was like the Necro Butcher elbow, where it's just like, there's a big ball there. It's like two golf balls sticking out of his arm.
Now, the unfortunate part for me is this is a well-worn story that the WWE likes to tell in terms of the angle of the guy who's getting over that they don't want to get over. And so they put things on television as part of the angle to tell you why you shouldn't like this guy in terms of how they really feel about him, including your boy Brad Maddox. May his job prospects be plentiful in the future.
Yeah, they won't be.
He'll be out here doing improv.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Well, he already has been. So.
I know. Go Mad Braddox.
But, they did this with Booker T. They did this with Chris Benoit. They did this with Daniel Bryan. They did this with Zack Ryder. They do this to a lot of guys that, it's the, you're popular. We'll put you in an upper card to main event spot. We'll tell the people why we don't like you. And you'll somehow get the rub by getting beat in the main event or getting screwed by the authority. And that'll be your reward. And then we'll wonder why you're not a bigger star than you were. Which, for the aftermath of this match, it was the crowd, as I recall, ate it up. Because half of them loved Randy Orton and half of them hated Triple H, from what I remember.
And the fans usually, I don't think we saw it so much with Sheamus this time, but the crowds pop for the Money in the Bank. They just do, because they know they're going to get a title change. They know it's a big moment. It feels like a big moment, so it doesn't matter, but
doing it against Daniel Bryan, it didn't get as loud of a pop as it would have, where it's like you're excited to see the title
change. I think like, more of it was
no,
the Triple H
I don't
turn.
Want to see the title.
More of it was the Triple H turn.
Yeah. But I thought Triple H did a great job refereeing up until that point.
Yeah, he did a really good job. Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about the match here, of course, but I was curious, too, because I was trying to remember, going into this match, you know, John Cena, it had come out that John Cena was going to take like a month off for injury.
Yeah.
With that elbow. And you saw the elbow. So it was pretty obvious. So most people going in, I believe, and I was looking at like Bleacher Report and Voices of Wrestling and like all these previews that were written before the show to see who was being predicted to win this match. And it was overwhelmingly people predicting that Daniel Bryan would win. But it was about 50-50 on whether or not Randy Orton would cash in. Like, Randy Orton cashing in was a big storyline, a big talking point coming into the show. Like, it wasn't so much a storyline going into the match in WWE world, but, you know, this guy, Randy Orton, didn't have a match in the show. He had the briefcase. In the bubble, it was 50-50 that Randy Orton would either cash in and take the title, or any combination. The other side was any combination of Orton cashing in and losing, or just no cash in at all happening, and Daniel Bryan winning and going off clean. So what happened was, of course, Randy Orton did cash in. Randy Orton did take the championship, but you know, it was 50-50 going in. Like, no one knew what to expect.
What did you think?
I remember, and this is 2 years ago, I remember going in thinking Daniel Bryan was going to win clean and he would take the championship. Because what happened on the show is, yes, Triple H was the ref, and I guess you could have seen it coming. But Daniel Bryan had just beaten, actually Daniel Bryan lost to Randy Orton. Do you remember the whole Daniel Bryan-Randy Orton match where it was supposed to be Randy or Daniel Bryan's big coming out, and he got the stinger, so the match was stopped and Randy Orton won? Mm-hmm. Like, that was a weird storyline going into this show, because that was supposed to be Daniel Bryan's big win. Daniel Bryan was going to get a title shot coming off of that win. But instead, Daniel Bryan loses, and John Cena, the whole storyline is John Cena handpicked Daniel Bryan to be his opponent for this show, instead of Daniel Bryan going in as a conqueror of everyone else, of all the other contenders. Daniel Bryan kind of went in weak. He went in a little weak on TV, having lost to Randy Orton, although he was a fighter. So you have this.
Yeah, I had.
Oh, you have the storyline coming second, in.
Okay, go ahead.
I kind of had this memory that people thought John Cena still might win despite the injury, but I'm reading all these previews from several different sites that are still online, and it just looks like no one, I must be false remembering that, because it looks like everybody picked Daniel Bryan to win. Daniel Bryan winning was almost a foregone conclusion. The question really was whether Randy Orton would get the title at the end of the night via the cash-in or not. And not many people, I didn't read any, you know, Triple H turning stories. I read a few. There were a few, like, would Vince McMahon come out and handpick Randy Orton and go against Triple H? Would Triple H turn and be in cahoots with Randy Orton all along? Because that was the other side of the story. I think we were all still expecting Triple H versus Vince McMahon, like some type of angle for control and power of WWE that we ended up never getting with Vince. So there were a couple of different ways that could have gone once Daniel Bryan won. But Bryan winning, it looked like, was a foregone conclusion.
See, I think I remember when Bryan got the stinger, going that there's no way Vince is going to put the belt on someone who's injured. So either Cena is going to take the month off with the belt, or Orton's cashing in on Cena.
Right.
I never thought Daniel Bryan was going to get any sort of run with the title. I thought he was going to get screwed by either Orton or Triple H. He's going to have this very, very tough match, but eventually get knocked out of the way and probably pinned.
Right.
And he'd be an afterthought. And then Orton and Cena could, because this was when they were doing the constant rematches of Orton and Cena, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. And
maybe,
and you know,
maybe
what? You're right on that too. Cause I went in expecting a lot of these previews to say that John Cena would win, then Randy Orton would cash in, and that would explain it. I expected to see that a lot, but maybe I was going to the wrong websites. I went to like Bleacher Report and What Culture and Voices of Wrestling and Wrestling Observer. The overwhelming response, at least at the time, factually, just from reading all the reviews, were people thinking Daniel Bryan was going to win, and that surprised me going back in time to this match, that was the narrative going in, that a lot of people expected Daniel Bryan to win, because I could be misremembering, but I kind of was on the same wavelength as you. I thought Daniel Bryan might lose the big match, but then Randy Orton comes in.
Yeah, but the match itself, I thought, over-delivered.
I at least thought that was a possibility, because going in, I seem to remember myself thinking Daniel Bryan would win. I just thought the possibility would be there of Cena winning. But the match
up until the stinger. happened. I thought Daniel Bryan was getting the belt.
Yeah, that Stinger really
after
stopped
that. I was after that. I just went, there's no way they're gonna put it on a guy that's injury prone.
Yeah, and I mean now look at him too, because I mean, after this, I mean injury after injury. So I mean he won't be put back in that role. But you're right. I mean the match itself was near flawless.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one nitpick I have on this match, it's that it could have ended 1 minute earlier.
Yeah.
Because it ends with the knee. It ends with, you know, John Cena going for the F5, being all cocky about it and misstepping, and Daniel Bryan hits him with the knee and pins him. But there was the spot near the end of the match where Daniel Bryan is up kind of in an F5 position. John Cena didn't get him quite up right away.
I mean, attitude adjustment.
In the F5?
F5, yeah.
Yeah. In the same attitude thing. Adjustment, the former FU, in the attitude adjustment, and Daniel Bryan hits the DDT, and then the crowd, because at that point, the crowd was super peaked. I mean, they were up as loud as they got through the entire match. And Daniel Bryan hits the DDT, the crowd comes down a little bit, and then they go into their finishing sequence. If there's one nitpick I have on this great match, I think instead of hitting the DDT, just getting out of that F5 and then shuffling right into the kick might have been the best way to go and get the pin there, because effectively the match would have ended the same way and you would have gotten it at the crowd's peak.
Okay, but correct me if I'm wrong here. This was Daniel Bryan debuting the Bumae knee, correct? Because this was right off the heels of Nakamura in the G1 and having a real hot run there.
Yeah,
I believe Daniel Bryan, this was Daniel Bryan taking this and debuting it here in SummerSlam, right?
Yeah, he definitely hadn't been using it a lot. I don't know if that was the first ever time. I'll try to find out here. But yeah, it was definitely very early on.
Because nobody was expecting that to be the finish when he hit the knee. Because you can tell nobody's standing up and cheering for it really all that much. They just saw him hit the knee.
Right, and that goes into it. I think you hit the knee before that DDT. And again, like I said, the finish is effectively the same. At least you get this kind of surprise finish when the crowd is up high and not when the crowd had kind of settled back down.
Okay.
Yeah, no, go with the same finish. Do the knee out of that DDT spot. And if you watch this match, you'll know the DDT spot I'm talking about. But yeah, and that's the one critique, because otherwise, I mean, excellent wrestling match. I favored this one over Brock and Punk. Like, I thought this was the best match of the show. It had the best story. Like, I mean, John Cena was coming in with the injury. He was wrestling. He was doing mat wrestling with Daniel Bryan. He was not looking out of place. I mean, this was one of those John Cena matches where he brought it on pay-per-view when you may not have thought he could bring it against a certain style. And he did. I mean, the guy delivers almost every single time. We did get some Twitter reaction on this match too. I asked folks following along at Shake Them Ropes on Twitter to tweet their thoughts on Cena versus Daniel Bryan. Brian Coulter on Twitter said, had absolutely no clue how they were going to have Bryan win decisively since Cena wasn't going to submit. The Frey Movement on Twitter said he loved the match. The angle, the whole thing, was fired up for Bryan Triple H at WrestleMania, which was never the plan, but still great stuff. And that's true. We talked about earlier how a lot of the previews had Daniel Bryan winning this match, but that's right, Bryan brought up a good point. We didn't know how that was going to happen, and we didn't think John Cena would ever submit, so they went with the pinfall. Lee says, being there live at the Staples Center was awesome. It was an awesome match. There was a sense of the big Bryan moment. The confetti fell, and you realized Orton wasn't on the card yet, and that would come to be. Danny said, I remember jumping with joy like a mark, yelling at the screen when Trips raised Daniel Bryan's hand. I was screaming for the pay-per-view to fade to black. Will Pruitt says, I was in the building and lost my mind when Bryan got the pin. Epic sadness by the time I had left. And that's a lot of the thoughts here. Timmy says, it was great, but I preferred Punk and Brock. Those were the big two matches on the show. Excellent show because of those two matches. I love the match. And Daniel Bryan wins. So this was the big winning moment. He had been champion before, yes, from Money in the Bank and from, you know, that scenario. But this really felt like Daniel Bryan's coronation.
Oh, yeah. This was the best match of the night.
And we're talking about coronations, like, you know, Roman Reigns got the same thing. So, I mean, talk about the parallel here. SummerSlam 2013, Daniel Bryan, who isn't the authority's choice, wins the title, and then Triple H screws him out of it, and the Money in the Bank cash-in takes the title right within 5 minutes. And we just had that again with Roman Reigns. We had Roman Reigns, who was not the authority's choice, wins the championship. Triple H screws him. And the Money in the Bank cash in.
And they have him as the underdog again.
And they have him as the underdog again. So when we're talking, when might Roman Reigns actually get the title? For all we know, he might be at the Royal Rumble. It might be, though, at WrestleMania. At least with the difference in scenario here is when Daniel Bryan lost that title, he had a couple of rematches. I mean, he had that the Hell in a Cell with Randy Orton where HBK was involved and turned on Daniel Bryan. Like, just the title reign after Daniel Bryan, and I guess it wasn't even a title reign because Randy Orton had the championship. That whole couple of month period after Daniel Bryan got screwed out at SummerSlam was just a mess completely. A mess completely on pay-per-view. It was a la Dean Ambrose on pay-per-view chasing the title.
They spent the next 6 months screwing Daniel Bryan time and time and time again to the point where we just hated seeing
it. We hated seeing it. He ended up joining the Wyatts and then the crowds just went nuts for him and he got the big babyface reaction and they forced him to put in the WrestleMania main event. Because of course, you know, if you're not aware, SummerSlam 2013 ends with Randy Orton cashing in Money in the Bank and winning the title off of Daniel Bryan, who had just won it. And you just saw a similar scenario with Roman Reigns. So when we were doing the last pay-per-view post-show, when we were doing the Survivor Series post-show live, we were talking about how this is the same angle. They're going to redo with Roman Reigns what they did with Daniel Bryan. At least this time, they're planning on Roman Reigns to be involved in the main event picture, we think. I mean, maybe John Cena and Brock Lesnar come back and they're in the title picture. We'll have to wait and see. But Daniel Bryan was not in the plans for WrestleMania at WrestleMania 30. Just the overwhelming response and the kind of the, you know, the Dave Bautista had come back earlier in January and that flopped a little bit, forcing WWE's hand. Because imagine what would have happened with Dave Bautista versus Randy Orton in that main event of WrestleMania. Ugh. Disaster of a show, even.
Yeah.
Because there was nothing really left on that show. If you took Daniel Bryan out of WrestleMania 30, at least what he did, maybe even put the Sheamus match on there if it was going to be Daniel Bryan and Sheamus. You take Daniel Bryan out of WrestleMania 30, that is a disaster of a show.
Oh, yeah.
One of the worst WrestleManias ever, possibly. But you put him in there, and it turns out to be one of the best WrestleManias and definitely one of the best WrestleMania finishes of all time.
This one isn't looking too good.
This one is not going in looking good, but you're going to have Brock on the show. You're going to have Cena on the show. You're going to have Undertaker on the show. Got to see what they do with them.
I'm concerned because I'm paying money for this one.
You are.
You're supposedly coming, aren't you?
I'm going to be there. I don't know if I'm going to be at WrestleMania.
Wow. Okay.
I might save the $200 and watch it at a bar and, you know, be ready afterwards to do whatever we're going to do with Shake Them Ropes. But I don't know if I have to be a part of it. I don't know. Maybe the main event will get me. Maybe the main event's going to be Daniel Bryan versus Hulk Hogan. What are the odds of that, you think, Jeff? What are the odds of Daniel Bryan and Hulk Hogan being the main event of WrestleMania 32?
Slim and none and Slim left town.
Why did Slim leave town?
Right, because he was booked poorly. So anyways, our match for next week is...
is a match that I was live for.
And you really love. You really love this match.
I love.
As I recall.
Edge versus Mick Foley.
Yes.
From 2005's WrestleMania. No, 2006. WrestleMania 22. 2006. I like this one a lot live. It had the big Mick Foley WrestleMania moment. What after the fact was really possibly Mick Foley's lone WrestleMania moment.
Yes.
Going through the fired table with Edge. So we'll talk about that match. That is next on our top 100. That would be what, match number 53?
I believe so.
We are almost halfway. Mm-hmm. Mick Foley will be our halfway match because Mick Foley is also in number 50, Undertaker versus Mankind from the King of the Ring.
Yes.
There's a lot of, a lot of Mick Foley coming up. Mick Foley and Shawn Michaels from Mind Games, number 44. Yeah, a lot of Mick Foley coming up on the old Cactus Jack, number 35. There is a ton of Mick Foley on this countdown. So I think we've already had one or two matches. Yeah, we're going to have a lot of Mick Foley on this countdown, but I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, Daniel Bryan, John Cena, if you haven't seen it, or just maybe
go watch.
If you haven't watched
definite
it
watch.
Since SummerSlam, yeah, you have to. It's great. Go watch the whole SummerSlam. Go watch Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow. Go watch Christian and a much lighter Alberto Del Rio.
Go watch Rob Van Dam and Dean Ambrose in the pre-show.
Go watch The Miz awkwardly open up SummerSlam with Fandango. Go watch
did
JoJo.
He?
Yes, he did.
I don't have him on there.
He was on SummerSlam 2000. He didn't wrestle.
Oh. Okay.
That was the gimmick where he was the host of SummerSlam.
Oh, yeah, that's
of,
okay.
SummerSlam.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And they have Fandango
I'm still
come out and dance around him.
Eva Marie was on this card. Natty with Naomi and Cameron defeated Brie Bella with Nikki Bella and Eva Marie.
Yep. Yeah, Eva Marie and Lord. JoJo, because this is when Total Divas was starting.
Yeah, because she sang the national anthem.
JoJo sang the national anthem. It's just crazy. JoJo's going to be a 3-year veteran this year of WWE.
She doesn't even like wrestling.
She doesn't. It's funny sometimes to see how long certain people have been in, because especially like an Eva Marie or a JoJo who feel like they've been there for 1 year and they're coming up on 3 years with the company.
Yeah.
Never ceases to amaze me. I mean, Tyler Breeze has been around for 5, maybe 6 years. Yeah, those guys just stick around. You know who's not sticking around, though?
Us.
I was going to say Cal Bishop. Because he gone. Devin Taylor gone.
Brad Maddox gone.
Brad Maddox gone. Adam Rose soon to be gone.
Really?
Oh, God, come on now.
They just keep people around till they rot.
They keep some people around, but I thought the Adam Rose gimmick was a last call. Adam Rose doing the Rosebush segment. That is 2:59 in a bar in Indianapolis. You got to get out now. You're
they make
done.
You drink more in Indianapolis because the women are uglier? What's up with that?
And you just stop serving alcohol at 3. The bar is closed at 3.
They close at 3 there? Wow, that's cool.
Is that late or is that early?
Late for L.A. Last call is 1:30. Bars close at 2.
Well, who would have thought? Indiana. Late night partying more than Los Angeles, California. This late night party is over, though. I'll see you next week.